shoveling dirt in every hole. Predators to condemn your soul. Watching you and watching me. We're all connected but separated. Misunderstood and so frustrated. A million armies of one have invaded. Watching you and watching me. We live behind glass curtains and act like nothing's wrong. Soon you will be long. I know you're out there somewhere. We've watched you for so long. Wait for you to fall. We'll expose you all. I know you're out there somewhere watching me. Little brother wants to make headlines, be immortalized. Everyone's got an electric eye with the digital spies. Little brother, standing by to dethrone each other. Watching you and watching me. Paranoid, the lens is our weapon. Desensitized in our lust for attention. Democratized by our voyeur obsessions. Watching you and watching me. Slip to perfection. Don't let them project you as you are. To make headlines, be immortalized. Everyone's got an electric eye, we're the digital spies.
Your experience begin right now. From high atop the mountains of British Columbia to you listening around the world, this is Spaced Out Radio. You can follow us on our website, spacedoutradio.com, on Twitter, at Spaced Out Radio. Give our Facebook page a like, Spaced Out Radio Show. You can follow us on Instagram, Dave Scott, S-O-R, or on our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio Show. Buckle up, space travelers. It's time to go for a ride as we are live on Spaced Out Radio. Good evening and welcome to Spaced Out Radio tonight. I am your host, Dave Scott, and thank you for listening in at spacedoutradio.com on Spreaker and Revolution Radio as we welcome you to tonight's show as we broadcast out of Uncle Jimbo's cabin right here in the great white north of Canada, live on this Monday night, early Tuesday morning if you're on the East Coast. Here at Spaced Out Radio, we broadcast every night of the week as we want to be your one-stop shop when it comes to the supernatural, conspiratorial, ufological, spiritual, and so much more. The guitar god, Ron Bumblefoot Thal, formerly of Guns N' Roses, is the man behind our theme music. Bumblefoot is the official sound of SOR. Also, you can check us out on Twitter, at Spaced Out Radio. Give our Facebook page a like, Spaced Out Radio Show. On Instagram, I can be followed at Dave Scott SOR. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio Show. Find us on TuneIn. Download our shows from iTunes. And, of course, our website is spacedoutradio.com. At this time, we'd like to say hello to everyone listening in on the Revolution Radio chat room on the High Plains Talk Radio Network, in the Spaced Out Radio chat room on Spreaker, along with our fans on Facebook at Euphoria Chronicles, Chronicles of the Unknown, Forest Moon Paranormal, and our flagship chat room, the SOR Space Travelers. Have you signed up for the SOR Space Travelers Club yet? It's only $5 a month. And with that, your name gets entered into private monthly draws, access to private group interviews, access to a special section on our website, and much more. We're going to give you a hell of a lot more than just access to our archives. While on our website, you can read our latest blogs, check out Eric Markham's SOR Spacewire for your latest and weird news. We also have a new feature on our website called the SOR Sightlines Report. If you've had an experience and you want it investigated by our researcher, paranormal, ufological, Bigfoot, doesn't matter. Just fill out a Sightlines report. Mike Schmidt, our lead investigator, will get back to you. All information is 100% confidential. If you're listening in on Revolution Radio, remember it is the largest nonprofit online radio station going. Take the time to visit freedomslips.com and donate today. The field of ufology has really seen a shift in dynamics over the course of the last 30 years, from eyewitness reports and testimony to video footage of today, of orbs, strange lights, and craft everywhere. But the problem with today's field of research is that we really don't know what we can believe anymore. Disinformation, maybe from the government, is everywhere. Combined with the creation of CGI, they've literally driven the most experienced ufologists to pulling out their hair because no one seems to know what is real and what isn't anymore. And really, you can't blame them. When technology advanced so quickly, it became apparent that video sharing websites like YouTube were going to be pelted with fake films. The same can be said for Bigfoot footage as well. And in reality, it's made ufologists like Michel Deschamps of Newfors.com step back from the people who were filing the reports, especially spaceships caught on tape. Now, the irony of this, because here at Spaced Out Radio, we're all about the experience. But as Michelle will tell us tonight, there's a real fine line on what's believable and what's not. And he's not the only one questioning where the direction of the field of UFO research is going. Michel Deschamps, welcome back to Spaced Out Radio for your second time. Good to have you back, and I guess this time you actually got your voice back.
Yes, I actually do. Thanks, Dave.
Real pleasure.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back.
Real pleasure to have you, my friend, because you know what? We talk a lot about UFOs on this show and the field of ufology and the study research that goes along with it. And very rarely do we get a Canadian perspective on things because there's not a lot of people in our country who are doing this. And if they are, they keep it real close to their chests. Why do you think there is such a, I don't want to use the word cover-up, but such a lack of quality research that goes on above the 49th parallel?
Maybe perhaps because they are feeling the same way I'm feeling. We don't get any funding for doing this kind of stuff, the field work. It's a lot of wear and tear on the vehicles. And frankly, that's one of the main reasons why although I miss field investigating, being on an actual site of any happening, things are so they can get costly, and it's not funding that we have. We have no money at all. Everything's out of our own pockets. So that is one problem. Another problem is that for myself, anyways, trying to educate people on the more recent sightings is pretty difficult to do when I'm not getting any reports, or people are unaware of my existence or the existence of my website, for instance. So it's and there's also the fear factor or the fear of being called crazy. The researchers themselves, I think we touched upon this before, where maybe it is getting very difficult in modern day times to distinguish between a real UFO and something possibly man-made / military. It may make people turn away from the usual investigating because they might say to themselves, why bother? Because it might turn out to be something totally explainable and not so mysterious.
Do you still buy the fact that people are having sightings?
Oh, yes. We've been under observation for a very long time, and I don't think that's ever stopped and will ever stop. I personally believe that some alien races are probably making it here for the very first time, although the humanoid sighting reports seem to be very far in between nowadays compared to what it was a few decades ago. So, I wouldn't be surprised at all if a lot more or just as many UFOs are flying. They may have upgraded a little bit. Perhaps now it is easier to spot them if we have infrared cameras, which actually makes them undetectable to the naked eye. Other than that, and we can't afford the equipment. I mean, you could save up for it, but we're not going to get any funding for it or any donations from the government, that is. So we have to sort of stay ahead of what's going on sighting-wise and perhaps get our hands on technology that will allow us to keep tabs on what's going on more recently.
Now, for the people who have never heard you speak before, Michelle, and the last time you were on, I'm going to tell you our audience has grown leaps and bounds, which is a good thing. I would love it if you would explain to people that not only are you a ufologist researcher, but you're also an experiencer as well. You have seen numerous weird craft in the sky. So break that down for us.
Okay, well, I'll just give you a quick synopsis of my life. I was born in northern Quebec in 1964, August 1st, In 1968, in December, my father, who was worked in mines, in nickel mines, and up north in Quebec, there was gold mines, decided to move us to Sudbury, Ontario, where two of the largest mining giants actually reside. We have Inco, now Inco Valley, because it got bought out by the Brazilians, and Falconbridge, which is now called Xstrata, and I don't know who owns that. But my dad worked for Falconbridge for 26 years, and unbeknownst to me at the time, being a little boy, that Sudbury turns out to have been one of the hot spots, among other places around the world, for UFO sightings, both daytime and nighttime. I later found this out when I was doing my archive research at the local newspaper archive and finding out how many sightings had actually taken place here. So that, and people keep asking me today, what came first, the sighting, my first sighting, or was it the interest? I think it was, it could have been both at the same time, because I did have a sighting when I was 9. But I thought maybe it was something copied off TV that I memorized, but it was only confirmed like years later. And then I started, before even high school, I started collecting reports here and there. I had heard the term flying saucer for the first time in 1974 or 75. And it started from that. And I never expected to have had as many sightings as I've had. Which didn't take too long after, initially the first 10 sightings, I would second guess myself and go through my own personal checklist. No, it's not a plane. No, it's not a helicopter, planet, satellite, meteor, bolide, meteor, whatever. After a while, I was totally convinced that this was a reality, and, I didn't need to be convinced anymore. And so, which explains why in the last 5, 6, 7 years, I haven't really skywatched. So Sudbury being one of the main spots of interest, apparently, because of the mining, which is the reason why UFOs are possibly attracted here, it just piqued my curiosity. The more and more I would find out about how much of a history this place has.
And in Canada here, there are a lot of people who have seen UFOs, even had ET experiences. You could pretty much go to any area of Canada to see them. The darker the better, because it's easier to see. The more north you are, you don't have the light pollution as you do more in the southern part of the country where 90% of the population lives. Do you think that when it comes to ufology in Canada, that the main reason why maybe there isn't as many reports as there was before is that because people are getting used to seeing lights in the sky, or maybe their eyes are too focused on their phones looking down? Or do you think that they pretty much feel it's nothing's going to happen with that report and I really don't want to get involved, the typical Canadian attitude?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of all that. Definitely nowadays with the cell phones, people have a tendency of even walking down the street, texting, looking down, and they could be missing the most amazing experience of their lives if they were to look up at the sky. Not to say that there's a guarantee that they'll see something. For instance, I myself, if I were to go back out to Skywatch, I probably wouldn't see anything until about maybe a week's time, because I'm familiar with the night sky. But cell phones is one problem. Another problem is the skepticism or the belief in the lies that we have been told by the military, the government, that this is all fantasy. There's no such things as UFOs. I mean, I work with a few guys that actually never experienced anything. One guy's actually older than myself, and I thought that by now he would have seen something. He's often outside doing photography, and yet I think it's all BS, and that just as it's stated in the accompanying letter to the closure of Project Blue Book, 3% of reported sightings is a very small percentage, so there's probably nothing to it. And that's, and it's sad because if people were to know the facts, they would be shocked. You know, I still believe that the percentage, as it was found out through Stan Friedman's work with Project Blue Book Special Report 14, and yes, there were 14 reports. I have number 1 to 13, and then Special Report, Project Blue Book Report 14 is actually, I have it on my website as a PDF, but we'll get to that in a minute, because right now my I found a new web host for my site and not all the files are working, the videos, the audios, and some of the PDFs. But Stanton Friedman's work actually demonstrated that the percentage of unknowns, excuse me, out of 3,201 sighting was actually 23.5% unknown. And this was a category separated from the category of insufficient information. If you did not have sufficient information, you could not classify the object as an unknown. So this is something that the public was never told. And unless you were able to view some of Stanton Friedman's lectures or presentations online, on YouTube, for instance. So there needs to be clarification that this is a real phenomenon. It's been happening a lot longer than the modern times, meaning 1947 on. I believe they've been here since before biblical times. And yeah, we could get into that a little bit later, but yeah, it's, I don't know if this is would explain why the reports are few in between. It's happened here where there's been nothing for a few years, and all of a sudden I get a flurry of reports that all of a sudden seem to come out of nowhere. And it's been like that too, represented in the newspaper archive as well. As one particular year, I think it was 1955, where nothing really, really happened in 1956. And then things started picking up again in 57, 58, 59. And it did that for off and on every 5 to 6 years since 1947, right up to the late 70s or early 80s. The research I did myself with the newspaper clippings, for instance, there was a lot of reports in the newspapers from 1947 on to, as I got closer to December of 1989, the articles were so far in between that I decided to cut off my research at December of 1989, although I have subsequently found additional clippings from the 90s and the 2000s. But I think the heyday of flying saucers is gone by, and now we find ourselves very lucky if we get a fascinating sighting or a report from an eyewitness of something that is totally outside conventional explanations.
I fully understand with that. Do you think the main reason why people aren't reporting is because maybe they are, but those reports are not getting through? I mean, let's face it. Everyone wonders what MUFON does with their reports. Everybody wonders if the government, which conspiracy says it really controls about 70% of the online UFO reporting sites. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things going on when it comes to these topics that could starve people from getting that information out.
Yeah, I agree. For my personal experience with MUFON, I was with MUFON Ontario for a few years, and I submitted to them a report, a very detailed report of a sighting that happened to me, and not just a sighting. Actually, I videotaped the object in broad daylight, and it took me, I don't know how many years, 5, 6, 7 years to get my original report back. It was in somebody's closet. And with MUFON in general, I feel about the same, that they were sitting on thousands and thousands of cases. Oh, so they have 70,000 plus case files of UFO reports. And we're talking like UFO reports that would be undeniable and definitely not man-made or military in origin. And they had a program not too long ago called Hangar One. That's been canceled. I've been waiting to see if there's anything that will spawn from that show, but nothing as of yet. And it sucks because UFO researchers, or at least maybe MUFON members, will bitch that nobody believes them, nobody's on the same page. Well, I basically say, well, yeah, don't be so surprised. Nobody's on the same page because you're not sharing the information freely. You either wait to have a publication that's worth enough money for you to make that off of by selling it, basically putting up your information for ransom, and not informing people like I do when I used to go and public speak in schools and universities. It's a crime to keep sitting on that information because it could turn the tables on everything if it were to be let out. It's the same thing with government files. I mean, how many more files? I don't believe the governments anywhere, the Australian government, the Canadian government, the American government especially, I don't think they've ever released actually everything they've ever had on UFOs. They've probably kept the best of the best juiciest cases, like the radar tracks, landing cases. You know, if it wasn't for us independents, like myself and Ted Phillips and other people who investigated the landing cases, I mean, nobody would be aware of these things. And I say it's a crime to just sit on that and not share. To me, UFO information should be shared freely, and it's for the benefit of mankind. Because the one question, among other questions we've been asking ourselves for thousands of years, are we alone? And the answer is a big resonating no. We're not alone, never have been, never will be. But we are told by our powers that be that we're imagining things. You know, people are smoking pot or on worse hallucinatory drugs. You know, I've talked to tradespeople that can't afford to be on drugs, and they've seen UFOs. One of my friends is 80 years old and worked at INCO, and he was a skeptic in the 50s until he started having his sightings in 1966, and then he did a complete turnaround. And I've met other people since then that were total skeptics before their one sighting that they've had, and the sighting was so profound and so close and so terrifying at the time that, they've completely went from skeptic to believer.
A good example of that, Michel, is Roswell, New Mexico. Everybody knows about the Roswell crash, yet nobody seems to know or has ever heard of the fact that there was a second crash that day. There was a second crash site in San Augustine, New Mexico. Yeah. And I'll shamelessly plug this show on November 18th, which is a Friday night. We will actually have an eyewitness to that crash. He's 73, 74 years old now. Gerald Anderson will be on the show with us discussing that San Augustine crash. And that's, cool. Anyways, that's a perfect example of what happens with disinformation, with covering up information, whether it's government, whether it's the public, whether it's the media, because we only hear of Roswell. Every year, Roswell has a big celebration around the crash site days. Nobody talks about San Augustine. And that's exactly the whole point. You know, they want us to get that information, they being the government, but they want to control how much of that information we actually are allowed to have. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, definitely. And Roswell is only famous because of all the civilian witnesses that were there. They had Roswell was not the first crash case. There was Cape Girardeau in Missouri in 1941. There was also the famous Los Angeles aerial battle in 1942, I believe, February 1942. And there's been subsequent crashes after. And people would say, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, if these beings are so advanced, you know, why would they crash? Well, one particular document that I found in the FBI files was the fact that the super large radar installation across that swept across New Mexico actually interfered with the guiding mechanism of the saucers, causing them to crash. In the case of Roswell and San Agustin, I tend to believe, as Stan Freeman tends to believe, that there was possibly a mid-air collision between two vehicles. One crashed that was practically intact, and the other one totally disintegrated and fell apart in pieces, with the escape pod, if you want to call it that, with the occupants further down, a few miles down from the main gouged out area at the Corona site. So yeah, there's been several crashes, and people say also, well, why New Mexico? The list goes, covers, even crashes that took place in Dalmagorsk in Russia. I think there was a crash in South Africa in 1989, but the reason why New Mexico is because at the time, or for a very long time, the three best technologies could be found in New Mexico. You had the V2 rockets, you had the radar installation, and you also had the atomic bomb. And so there was only one place back in 1947 and even in the early 50s where you could find all those technologies, and that was in that general area. I've also heard of reports of UFOs crashing or being seen near White Sands Proving Ground, which is also in New Mexico. And New Mexico is also home to some of the largest military installations and scientific labs in the world. Los Alamos, Sandia Base. In terms of the Air Force bases, you have Curtin Air Force Base near Albuquerque. And in Roswell, of course, which was the home of the 509th Bomb Wing, the only bombing wing in the 40s that could drop the atomic bomb, and did drop the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So it's like anything else. It's like us discovering a planet. The first thing we would do is to look for signs of pollution, because signs of pollution would indicate civilization. Then you would look for weaponization to see at what level is there technological achievements in military weapons. And so New Mexico for us is exactly what the aliens would have under observation. With Sudbury and other mining places where we have the largest stack in the world, the largest chimney in the world, it's still, I think, listed in the Guinness Book of World Records. It's like a beacon for them. But speaking of beacons, I think if the UFOs weren't already coming here in mass before 1945, we attracted them, unbeknownst to us, by detonating the first atomic bomb, which sent a silent or invisible shockwave out throughout the universe. And then they looked up and said, holy shit, the kids have found the matches. And ever since then, there's been more sightings as of 1945 and continuing to this day, although we may not be aware of them because, of course, the same problems. People looking down at their belly buttons instead of looking up at the sky, staying indoors and watching the football game instead of being outside more and more. You know, I probably saw more sightings because I don't like sports. I don't watch sports. I'm not... I don't fall for all the distractions that are given to us today. And I'm not the only one who has been made aware of things as of the age of nine. It seems that age nine is an age where a lot of people have had their first experiences and be made aware that there's a lot more beyond our visual range that actually takes place that needs more investigation, serious investigation.
And I fully agree with you in regards that we need to investigate a little bit more, but let's face it, life is so busy now, people don't have time to go out into the wilderness away from the city to go stare up at the stars. That is about as frequent as trying to find a drive-in movie theater these days. I mean, it's damn near impossible. You know, and when people finally do put their eyes up, they're usually caught off guard by what they saw. They're not comfortable with discussing it. They're not comfortable with, you know, the experience because maybe a beam of light came down, whatever it may be. And on the flip side, we have the government putting out disinformation. We have people not getting their reports followed up on. And it's just a real mishmash of where ufology used to be. And now we throw in YouTube and other video sharing sites where you can't trust a thing that goes on there anymore because people have become so advanced with CGI, with faking films, especially at night, with, you know, and we've all seen the video Dark at Night where they're focused in on Venus or Jupiter, whatever the brightest star is in the night, but the camera is shaking, making it look like the star is actually moving. We've all seen those. So how has today's technology really affected the investigation and trying to get down to the answers of what we are looking for?
Yeah, it's pretty well what's happened. The one tip off, I guess, that I get from watching those YouTube videos is that whoever's creating those videos is obviously somebody who's never seen a UFO because they keep adding. I look at the UFOs on YouTube and they look like the kind of models we would make for science fiction films. UFOs are so plain Jane. Like one of my friend who's a witness who worked at INCO, he says there's one night when this object came down out of the northeast, and it was a 50-foot oval, completely white in color, with one red flashing light at one end and a steady green light on the other, and not knowing which was the front and which was the back. Now, on the YouTube clips, you see these things with appendages sticking out, saucers that morph in and out of their own of shape. They change shape. The background is real, like you'd have the Hudson River and the cityscape of New York, but the UFO in the foreground is completely CGI. I've seen the videos where two jet fighters are following this one saucer, and I said, well, that's obviously a fake because the saucer would leave those two jets in their dust. You know, we don't have, and I couldn't care less if I know what the military has or not. There's no way in hell they can keep up with these things. These objects can go. For instance, the same guy who worked at INCO, that particular sighting in 1967 or 68 was tracked on radar when the object came down out of the sky and disappeared below the radar line for 15 minutes. And when it left the area, it was tracked on radar, traveling at 22,000 miles an hour. In the yard itself, it was like 5 to 10 miles slow. Then when it angled up at 45 degree angle, barely missing one of the buildings there, one of the structures at the mine site, it's a huge complex. I even made a model of it, and I plan to make a little video of the actual sighting using a small model that I made of the UFO and the complex. And yeah, the radar, he had by then a lot of reports made to the radar base, so they were open enough with them to tell them that they had tracked this object leaving at 22,000 miles an hour. Now, I know another video was shot in northern Manitoba, and the object was tracked or clocked at 33,000 miles an hour. You know, so there's still hopefully some things that can, little hints here and there that actually can tell us or help us distinguish from what's real and what's not. But the YouTube videos, sadly, a majority of them are fake. There's a few that kind of raised my eyebrow, and I have to admit that I've placed them on my website so people can take a look at them, because there's something about it that just tells me that this possibly could be real. But if I'm told that the CGI technology is so good where the background goes blurry, the foreground goes blurry, then everything goes clear at the same time and it makes sense, but I'm still yet told that it's fake, then I will take it down from my site. But because having had seen UFOs myself and understanding the behavior, when I see something similar on some of the videos, I something my little voice tells me that it's a real clip. No, unless I'm told. And plus, you have to look for the provenance too. If it lists the area where it was shot, a lot of times the YouTube videos are just posted up there, and there's nothing written about them, where they were shot, how long the sighting took place, the duration, the direction of movement, whether there was lack of sound or sound present during the sighting, etc. So it's very hard to tell sometimes. But for a guy like myself, who self-taught in becoming a trained observer, even looking at videos, sometimes I can tell the difference or sort of feel which ones are real and which ones are fake or possibly fake.
It is pretty easy to tell some of them. The one that always cracks me up is this huge invasion of ships over it looks like a Mexican beach resort or something along those lines. And here I'm thinking, are people that gullible to think that this is real, considering that if that were to happen, every major news source, whether you believe the media is infiltrated or not, and I don't think it is, but even if you believe that, and there was four or five ships coming at low altitude at dusk flying over your resort where you're staying at, and you just happen to catch it on camera, that is going to be international news. It's not going to be held back. All of a sudden, the military isn't going to storm every newsroom saying, oh, you can't run that, you can't run that. I mean, that's just absolute moronic if you think that. Okay, but you know what I'm saying, Michelle, is there is so much CGI out there, and people are buying into it. And if they're buying into that disinformation, it's really not doing the field of research any type of positivity at all.
Yeah, and the thing is with the media, the mainstream media, I have to admit, they are owned. They're owned and bought and paid for. The local media is different. I've gotten better results from talking with the local media than, let's say, mainstream media. Mainstream media will only use a UFO story if it's a dead or slow news week. But I think that even within the ranks of the media, the mainstream media, which is one of our biggest problems because they won't look at this, they're told to look the other way. People talk about disclosure, and I say, well, disclosure is not going to come from the government. What's going to need to happen is something akin to Independence Day, but without the invasion scenario, where UFOs, super large UFOs, so large that people will know right away, can't be military flying this because there's no sound and they're like miles wide. Having all these objects over all the main metropolitan cities all over the world at the same time for weeks on end, people driving on the highway, stopping, pulling over and standing outside and say, holy shit. First of all, they'd say, what the hell is that? And second of all, say, holy shit, we've been lied to. Then the media would have to be forced to look, because if they wouldn't do it on their own, the alternate media, the alternative media like RT and other stations like that would then put the mainstream media to shame by scooping them on what would be the biggest story of the millennium, you know, or since mankind, since the origins of mankind. I mean, the fact that there's visitors here, several different visitors, people still sometimes you hear them talk about UFOs, and the way they talk about UFOs is that they're coming from one source. I have on my website, and I'm the only one to have done this, I've cataloged 85 or 86 different species, and those are apart from the ones that are performing the abductions. It needed to be put up there because I believe that there's many, many different races. Most of them are all to be, because we'd be done for. We'd be done for if any of them were conquering race, like the Klingons, for instance. Thank God there's no such thing like the Klingons or even the aliens from the Aliens movies, because we'd be screwed. We wouldn't stand a chance with those kinds of creatures. But on my website, under the UFO occupants page, you will see what's been reported worldwide. And that's having something like that, like an Independence Day type scenario, would be the only thing that would make people within the ranks of the mainstream media all of a sudden decide to turn tail and say, this needs to be reported. You know, this would be an awakening on a mass scale. And that's exactly what we're going to need. And it's going to happen sooner or later. It's going to happen. This truth, this reality of UFOs cannot keep the lid on this. The pot is already boiling over. No matter how many people are sitting on the lid is already lifting and the pot is boiling over. They can't stop this. I don't understand the government's or the military's arrogance and odd behavior in thinking that they can keep this covered up forever. I just don't see that. And so, who knows? I mean, I can't wait for the day. Maybe then my research will completely stop, because what's the point of researching something if all of a sudden you get everything answered, all your questions answered, you know? How many are coming here? What's their reason for coming here? You know, but we could probably talk about like my personal beliefs on why they're here and what the abduction phenomena means to me. I've come to understand to believe that first of all, one or two of these races have had their hands in our creation, and the abductions is a way by which they are monitoring us as we continue to develop. Mm-hmm. Pure and simple. Pure and simple. They're not here to invade us. They're not here to the hybridization. That's because they are a dying race, and they have to, at any cost, they have to match up with other compatible bipeds. And even if they lose purity of the race, they want to continue themselves. So if they have to mix with different breeds of bipedal creatures, that's what they'll do. And they seem to have the technology and the ability to do that. We are not at that stage yet. You know, we talk about cloning this, doing that, but, you know, we're basically barely making it over the bars of the crib, you know, ufologically speaking. I mean, making it to space and all that, we're barely making it out of the crib, you know. And the military makes you want to believe that we've got this, we've done that, we can do this, we can do that. Well, hopefully there's universal laws it put in place that will prevent us hostiles from doing things that we think we can do, when, you know, there's probably somebody even stronger and more superior to us out there that will say, whoa, you can only do this and you can only do that. We're not going to allow you to do a whole lot. Look what we've done to this planet. If it's not a cesspool of pollution and destitution and famine and irradiated soil, I mean, what else would you call it? You know, there's so many implications to the UFO phenomenon. I mean, I looked at UFOs thinking I was just going to look at UFOs. I never knew I was going to become an activist, an environmentalist, an archivist, historian of a type. You know, it's like studying, you know, we're basically studying vehicles manned by other creatures from other planets. It's kind of funny when you really think about it, you know. It would be like UFOs, like the UFO occupants studying us and our vehicles and how we function. It's kind of weird when you really think about it, and funny, but it would be such an awakening for anybody to even delve into this as deeply as I have and other researchers have.
Why do you think there is still, with all this evidence out there, the major cover-up continues? Why do you think that the U.S. seems to be leading the way in regards to the lack of disclosure or the lack of proof being brought forward? We've seen other countries do it. We've seen countries in Europe. Yeah. We've seen countries in South America come out with what they know about UFOs. Yet that gets swept under the rug here in North America, and for the most part, Europe as well. And we're sitting here dealing with this mystery that everyone, the majority of the population now in North America, believes UFOs exist, but nobody ever comes out and says what they know.
I think the only reason, and I'm willing to state this right now, the only reason why there's disinformation and cover up is because if they've managed to back engineer any part of any particular UFO and they're able to understand how it works, that's the kind of technology that they do not want to fall in other people's hands. And so if they're able to do something that beforehand they could not, it would be reason enough to keep everything covered up and try to dismiss the reality of UFOs as a flight of fancy. And I personally don't even know to what extent they've managed to back engineer. If you listen to Bob Lazar, and I believe Bob Lazar, I believe his story thoroughly. I believe that when he walked in there, he says they weren't further along with the research, and I guess they needed somebody from the outside. David Nader said the same thing. This was a young rocket expert at a young age who was invited to Area 51, and he discovered that the technology is symbiotic. You have to have a hands-on. Like the beings themselves are part of the wiring for the functioning of the ships. Human beings can't do that. You know, that's a step of evolution we haven't even reached. So that alone tells me that they're not maybe possibly as further along as they would like us to believe they are. And sadly enough, in the States, because they've been dummied down so much, the people there believe that their military is almighty and are able to do an awful lot of amazing things that they may not be able to, you know, and to raise themselves at the same equal level as an alien being who's possibly been around for millions of years in existence. You know, some of the races have been reported to claim that their life expectancy is between 350 to 400 Earth years. That's an awful lot more years on us. We're lucky if we can live up to 100 years and get to see what you can experience within your lifetime. So I don't claim to know everything that the military has or has figured out or has back engineered, but I'll be damned if I ever fall into the trap of believing that it's all them and there's nothing else out there coming here to do all these things and fly over our cars and scare the shit out of the occupants of the vehicle on the road, or, you know, and I've heard stories like that many times over. So it's going to come to a front. It definitely will come out one day, and my website and other people's websites is a way by which to prepare the people for the reality so that when it happens to them, their first sighting, their first encounter, it won't be as shocking, hopefully, you know, not causing a heart attack or something, because I know people that I work with, they would die instantly if something were to happen to them because they haven't been prepped for this stuff at all. And they wouldn't even look at it. It doesn't matter. You know, they can list all the stats reports off of a baseball game or a hockey game and say this manager's name and this is who's been traded for this other player. They can say all that, but they don't know anything about what I've been researching. And yet they call me crazy, or they say, oh, yeah, well, it's just, you know, you're smoking something or whatever. You know, so it's a sad state of affairs, but I may not be around for the day when the full disclosure takes place, but it's not going to come from the government. It'll have to be from their actual presence on this planet, like visibly seen by millions of people. Like Phoenix, Arizona was only, 10,000 people witnessed the several sightings that took place there. Well, I'm waiting for the next Phoenix, Arizona, and hopefully the next one will include or involve millions of eyewitnesses that you won't be able to dismiss. Well, I still don't believe that they've fully dismissed all those Arizonians that actually saw those large boomerang-shaped objects, or the ones that were seen in the Hudson Valley in the 80s.
Well, the former governor who made fun of that sighting in a press conference the next day has actually come out and said he saw it. He saw the UFO over the Phoenix Lights. Hold on. Trying to hold in a sneeze here. I apologize. But he came out and said afterwards, it took him years, you know, maybe he's just trying to get back in the public eye one way or another, but saying that, you know, he felt bad that he had to do what he had to do. I think he was shut up personally. you know. Fife Symington is his name. Thank you, Eric Markham. You know, and you feel bad for him because here's a gentleman who runs the state. He could have, I mean, that Phoenix Lights incident in 97, March 13th, it should have, you know, broken open the whole disclosure movement. And yet the government doesn't say anything. Their own governor, Mr. Symington, made fun of their own citizens. You know, he walked away with egg on his face over that incident. And I think that's the fear that anybody else has about coming out if they're a government official.
Yeah, it's definitely a big risky step to take in admitting that you've seen something. But he's not the first. I mean, Ronald Reagan had a sighting when he was governor of California, I believe. He directed, I believe I have a clipping about that too, a news clipping, where he directed his pilot to follow this particular UFO that had just gone right by their plane. There was also
Jimmy Carter.
Kucinich. Jimmy Carter had seen one in 1969 while governor of Georgia. And there's been a few other ones. There's been Senator Russell, who was traveling through Russia on a train, and he witnessed a UFO sighting out there in the late 40s, I believe. Another first for any website is I've listed all the politicians, and the politicians, or at least the politicians and UFOs, created a page called Cops and Saucers, which involved police officers and UFOs. And you see the politicians, you know, you look at the politicians when it's pretty interesting to see that Senator Russell's story is on there. I also put down scientists and UFOs. People are kind of adamant to say, well, there's no way that some of the paperclip scientists ever made it to Roswell or whatever. But back in the day, you know, they thought flying saucers ran on nuclear power. And who were the nuclear authorities of the day? It was Edward Teller, Robert Oppenheimer. Einstein wasn't so curious about flying saucers, but he'd heard about them. So, you know, you look towards those people and say, well, if there's nothing to this, you know, they wouldn't have looked into it or been called in on a case, you know, to give their opinion. And they were the experts of the day, you know? With the government acting the way it is and having, Symington, act the way he did, I mean, maybe his hand was forced to do that, but I'm glad that he came out and confessed that he had seen the object. You need more people with guts like that to come out and tell their story. You know, any time somebody's collecting UFO reports, we have to remember also that we're probably getting only 10% of the reports. You know, there's probably 9%. 90% of UFO sighting reports that go unreported because of the fear factor, or you're told you're crazy, or if you're a government official or a psychiatrist or whatever, you don't want to be looked down upon as being crazy by your peers if you all of a sudden come out and admit that you've had an encounter of some type. So,
and that's a chance that everybody has to take. I mean,
yeah.
But I'll give you another example. I know in British Columbia here, before I ever thought of putting this show together, Michelle, I filed a couple of reports with UFO BC. Three of them, to be exact. I got one phone call.
Well.
So at what point is it the fact that maybe it's not just the government's fault, but it's the fact that the people who are supposed to be researching this are just as aloof and not following up their duty that they proclaim online?
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose in my own way, I guess I've become, well, an armchair researcher, but the thing is, it's like, running an archive is different. I still on occasion will go and talk to witnesses, and when you meet them in person, it's when you realize that, yeah, they've really seen something, because it changes them. It changes you forever. Once those floodgates open, you can't shut them. You see the glaze in their eyes and see the way they tremble. Sometimes when you tell their story, you know they've seen something. And I've seen that reaction so many times that I can tell when somebody's trying to fool me. I've had phone calls by kids who would crack a joke or whatever, and I saw it like a mile coming. And I would hang up right away. For kids, I wouldn't hang up right away. But I would tell them, says, you know, look into this stuff, because it's not all fun and jokes. You know, some people have been terrified from this, and in the abduction phenomena, people have been tipped into suicide because they just can't handle having another recurring encounter, you know. So it's not fun and games. It really isn't. But at the same time, it's super fascinating. It's such an eye opener. And
Michelle, I'm going to cut you off right there. We're going to go to a quick break here. Okay. I apologize. Michelle Deschamps is our guest tonight. He's a Canadian ufologist. His website, newfors.com. That's NOUFORS.com. You're listening to Spaced Out Radio. We'll be back right after this.